And it's, sorry, I banged the banged my fist again. Instead of like getting this out, they just, you know, because they're in the throes of the pharmaceutical industries, they're not going to talk about it. They're going to look for the drug, the magic bullet that someday is going to cure these things.
Well, for instance, diabetes 2 can be cured through diet.
From what all the major killers are lifestyle related, all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, basically people in our culture, basically people are they're committing slow motion suicide.
Exactly.
Yeah, by their lifestyle choices. And it's not, I don't mean this in a personal way. I'm not saying you stupid SOB, you know,
and one lifestyle choice is to follow the medical industry and go ahead and take what's prescribed. I mean, that's a lifestyle choice also.
You don't have to think. It's easier. And also, you can just go anywhere and eat. I know from being natural, I'm always turning down food because I don't know what's in it and stuff. So.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's much more difficult. Most people aren't going to make that kind of a commitment.
Yeah, when I was talking about, you know, eat well, move well, think well, the first tenet to me of thinking well is thinking for ourselves. You know, we live by a lot of dogmas in this country, both on the liberal end and on the conservative end. And when it comes to MDs, you know, MD, I always say, stands for medical deities. We listen to them like they're some kinds of gods, and we have to think for ourselves rather than the conclusions of their thinking. Which, if research was truly reliable and not funded by and distorted by the pharmaceutical industry, we could trust probably what the average MD tells us. But the average MD, they get 20 hours max. The school in the medical school in the United States, Stanford, with the largest number of hours in nutrition, has 20 hours of research on classroom time on nutrition. That's awful. And most of their CEU, you know, continuing education hours, and their in classroom medical school hours on pharmaceuticals are taught by the pharmaceutical industry. Now, a lot of these people have high school educations, so the doctors have a very limited understanding of what these drugs do. But so we need to think for ourselves. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, it's very healthy to have a regular, free-flowing intestinal
fiber
action.
Helps.
Yeah. Fiber helps. But I mean, that medically, that is one of the most beneficial things, or I mean, health-wise, that's one of the most beneficial things that you can have going on in your body.
Absolutely.
Is to have that food coming in and going out on a regular and fast and consistent basis.
Yeah.
Fiber makes it go much faster.
So, and obviously, meat's going to slow it down. The whites are going to slow it down. Yeah. White flour,
how about
white
milk?
Sugar. Milk's going to slow it down.
Milk has been called liquid beef. I've heard lately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Liquid
and
beef.
And if you think about it, when we drink cow's milk, we're drinking the milk of an obese animal that's been made obese by hormones that it's given and various antibiotics that it's given, of course, and those drugs are magnified. They're more concentrated in the milk that we actually drink, so we're taking them in larger amounts or more concentrated amounts in the cow. The obese cow that...
milk is for baby cows, I think, isn't it?
It's for baby cows. Have you? Yeah, I mean, have you ever...
I drink a lot of milk. As a vegetarian, it's the easiest way for me to get protein.
You drink... What do you drink?
A lot of milk.
Cow's milk?
Yeah, because I don't have access to cooking right now, so I can't do the grains and beans things.
As far as milk's concerned, well, first of all, I'm not a big...
I'm worried about it, too, because now it's got radiation in it from Japan. You know?
It's absolutely. And you're, and Rutabaga Rick was right, that the milk is... It's a great food. It's one of the best foods on the planet for a baby cow. And we're the humans take it because we've been sold a bill of goods by the food industry, by the milk industry, dairy industry.
Isn't it good for your bones?
Oh, yeah. It actually causes osteoporosis. It's been shown that people with higher milk intakes have a greater...
Well, it must be
greater
good for something. What is it good for?
It's
right?
Good for making us obese. Basically, we're taking something that's designed to take a very relatively small animal and pump, blow it up very quickly in a matter of months.
I don't drink full fat, but it's got to be non-fat or I will get fat. Yeah.
So you're taking something that's even more tampered with. No offense. Raw milk would be good. Raw goat milk would probably be closer to...
Oh, wait a minute, though. I mean, because you can get salmonella from raw milk. I had some raw cheese and I got salmonella.
Yeah, but you've just got to be careful. You got to get it. It's hard to get, and it's illegal in some places. So try to get some good organic milk. And a lot of this depends on whether our... You know, I don't know what Free's ancestry is, but let's say you come from a part of the country that grew where milk was commonly drank. He'll have a better chance of breaking it down than, say, someone who's African-American, you and I, who are Italian. You know, Mediterranean areas don't do well. Because our ancestors didn't take it. So we don't handle the casein, the milk protein. And as a result, we get allergic reactions to it. We get various bowel disorders as a result of it.
What about beef? It's what's for dinner? Beef.
What's for dinner?
Remember?
Beef.
Yeah.
Oh man. You know,
is all beef? I mean, what about organic beef or grain-fed cows? I mean, is that okay?
Some animals eat meat, and again, I really look at animals and what they do. You know, I've never seen, for example, a deer running along out in the wild sucking on the teat of another deer. So, you know, once that deer is grown up and it's been weaned from its mom, you know, it's not drinking milk. But some animals do eat. A deer is vegetarian, but some animals do eat meat. They eat free-range beef, or they eat free-range pork, or whatever, or they eat free-range birds. By the way, you were mentioning, speaking of birds, you were mentioning cleaning our colon out. And Free, of course, correctly said, you know, a high-fiber diet is really important. People will say to me, you know, well, how natural are colonics? And for a long time, I used to say, you know, in the wild, you don't see you don't see an animal sticking a tube up its butt, flushing its colon out. And then one day, when I was in Louisiana, I have seen it since then. About 5 years ago, I was in Shreveport, Louisiana. One of my students said, Dr. Jeff, yeah, actually, if you look at a heron or an egret, they do that. And I said, they take a tube and they stick it up. No, they said no. What they do is they will take their beak, they'll dip it in the water, they'll fill it with water, they stick it into their rectum, and they expel the waste.
No kidding.
So I used to walk along the Red River every day, beautiful river in Shreveport, and I would, you know, lots of egrets, lots of herons, especially at sunset, and damn, if I didn't see that happening all the time. And they don't do it on a yearly basis, which is now what I recommend, a good colon cleanse or a series of colonics on a yearly basis. But and also not eating the foods that clog the colon up. But they're doing it it's almost like a nervous habit. They're doing it every 5 minutes, it seems, keeping those colons squeaky clean.
Well, that's another thing. They're clean, and that's what people would use fast for, too. I mean, you fast, and that allows your body to detox, because normally it's having to deal with food all the time, so it never gets a chance to detox.
Yeah, and it's funny. We know on some level that we're supposed to fast just by virtue of the fact that we call the morning meal breakfast, you know, which means to break a fast. We fast all night long. You know, we're not... Now, I think some of these fast food restaurants are touting the fourth meal, where like at midnight you have a four. I mean, before a long, we're going to have McDonald's tell us we should set the alarm for 2 o'clock and rush on down and have our Big Mac.
No, don't be so hard on McDonald's. They have their new organic salads now.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think you can go to McDonald's and get a healthy salad.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can believe you.
I don't know.
All right, we'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back. And Jeff, you wanted to go over a few things.
You know, along with just embracing a lifestyle that's natural, you know, I was joking about washing. Well, I'm not joking. You know, what do animals do? They eat well. They move well. They don't think well necessarily, but they don't think badly. I mean, they know their place.
They eat raw foods.
They kind of they're good members of their community, for the most part. The buzzword about 10 years ago that popped up was wellness. You see wellness centers everywhere. Wellness means different things to different people. To us, it probably means what we've been talking about tonight. In the medical community, it probably means attaching a center to a hospital where you can come and basically work out. But I've seen patients that have come into my offices that have been the victims of so-called medical wellness. And I'll give you an example. I had a 16-year-old girl come in a few years ago, and because she had two aunts that died due to breast cancer, they surgically removed both of her breasts. They performed radical mastectomies on her, not because she had breast cancer, but because it was in her family history. That's malpractice. That's a crime. I read something recently in the Huffington Post.
She must have agreed to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't knock her out.
That's the thing. You don't have to agree what your doctor says.
No, no.
In fact, today I turned out my doctor had put on some medical tests, blood tests, or whatever. One of them was a drug test. I go, what do you mean drug test? Oh, yeah, marijuana and methamphetamine. I go, I'm not taking that fucking test.
Well, a lot of people, I mean, obviously she was. I don't know. I talked with her, and she was basically...
And enough of that. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And coming up right at you is Bathrob Spears Broadsides with special, probably 5-minute guest, stuff and nonsense, Steve Plaich, who is walking the streets. Say hello, Steve.
30 minutes. I am always happy to be here for Free Radio listeners.
Now let's hope you can actually be heard. In the meantime, here's a little musical instrumental from a street performer, or perhaps just a person who sells his CDs on the street for donation. We'll be right back. That was a lot of Andy Cook, according to my studio musical expert, Stephen Sebastian Plaich, who's here chatting with us. Hi, Stephen.
How are you?
Kind of hot and cranky today, yeah. But a little bit frenzied trying to get some things together. But this was something that was hawked to me on the street called Infinite Idiom. We heard, if I can read it, that's always going to be a plus. This is Da Cha Cha, Let It Live, and the beginning of Coco Miloco.
Coco Miloco.
And that kind of electronic music of the future, or possibly a little too far in the future for me, from Andy Cook, who's the guy I ran into in. On Pacific Avenue. It was yesterday, actually. You are tuned to Free Radio, as I mentioned to you before, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. With me in the studio, en route to another one of his endless meetings, is Steve Plaich. Steve, of course, well-known for needle exchanging, city council running, suicide preventing, and unsuccessfully trying to coax Mayor Coonerty into opening the Harvey West Pool. Steve, what good news have you brought us today?
Well, the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project seems to be gaining more participants, so we're happy about that. We're moving forward with the DSAL referendum that we hope to put on the ballot in November 2012, and I'm going to a meeting with one of the water commissioners
tonight. But probably of more interest to your listeners, they had the big smart meter meeting last night, and I understand that you're having maybe some of the proponents and opponents on your show on Sunday. Well, I am trying to line up the two opposition speakers who spoke at the Voices video, which is available online for those who want to look at, just go for Smart Meters, Voices, Josh Hart, H-A-R-T. If you search for that online, you'll find the video that has been thoughtfully posted online. And had an interesting discussion. Actually, there were some significant questions asked by both sides. Josh Hart against the Smart Meters, Keith Gudger, who is in favor of the Smart Meters, and I want to put them face-to-face, arm them, and then step back and watch the blood fly. Actually, that's not true. That's kind of the dramatic way of putting it. Actually, this is more of an inquiry. I would like to get some questions answered, and I've told both individuals that I will kind of forward them some questions, like Keith Gudger has claimed that natural gas companies are a group of interest in opposing smart meters because it cuts into their profit, because smart meters will tell when peak use is and it'll make things, to some extent, it might make things cheaper. That's the claim of the smart meter proponents. And I want to find out about that. Also, Josh Hart is, Gudger has challenged Hart on the air regarding the World Health Organization.
He has indeed, absolutely, yeah.
Which now apparently claims that it's either possible carcinogen or
no, it is. It's classified it as some level of carcinogen.
So is smart meter radiation carcinogenic? If so, how carcinogenic? How can I get cancer really if I really want it? This could be an opportunity for those who want to engage in suicide activation rather than suicide prevention, which you might actually want to get into.
And I guess the dispute is more over the character of non-ionized radiation. And Keith will tell you one thing about non-ionized radiation, and certainly Joshua has a different opinion about the effects of non-ionized radiation.
I'm going to try to get the two of them, and perhaps, who knows, maybe you'll be in the studio firing out questions as well on Sunday morning.
Might be a little crowded in here. We might put the grandstands in.
That was something Keith asked about. He said, are we going to have a bunch of smart meter opponents clawing at me afterward, as happened at the Voices show? And he didn't quite put it that way, but he was concerned about that possibility. And I said, no, we'll only have, Heidi there with, punching you in the vitals. And stuff. No, actually, I don't know who's going to be there, but this is going to be at 9:30 on Sunday, the day after tomorrow. That'll be next Sunday, the 7th of August, at 9:30. So put it on your calendar if you're interested in smart meters. I got to tell you, though, that I'm a little bit, I'm hoping that we can actually talk about issues and get more information, because there's plenty of opportunities for people to throw around rhetoric on this issue, and not just rhetoric, meaningful polemics on this issue. And I, as a person who's a polemicist himself all the time on some issues, I appreciate that. But on this issue, I am still trying to learn, which may make me a useful idiot in the hands of PG&E, who knows. But that's what I'm trying to do, and that's what I'm doing with this show, is trying to educate myself in the community and find out what's really going on. So it's more, I'm going to encourage people to call in, give their opinions, but I'm also going to look for new information. And I'm looking for both sides to address the issues of the other side rather than emphasize their own points again and again and again ad infinitum. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, Keith, to his credit at the Voices from the Village show, weathered the storm of an entire studio full of anti-smart meter folks with signs, and they're a very motivated, very committed group. So, and Keith, in good faith, just presented his point of view. Obviously, if you've archived and seen the show, I thought it was one of the best Voices from the Village in terms of point-counterpoint. I think a lot of it was polemic, and I'm not really certain that there's a lot of scientific evidence. It's all anecdotal at this point. So that's what they're kind of trading bars back and forth. But nevertheless, it's a starting point for the discussion.
Sure. The problem I have, of course, is this is not really a homeless issue. Everybody else, many other groups, including the forum that you may be talking about in a moment that you stopped in briefly at last night, Loudon Nelson, mm-hmm. which I didn't get to, is covered it. There'll be another forum in Felton, you were telling me tonight.
This evening at 7 o'clock, they're going to do an SLV forum. Apparently, Joshua was saying that they have some folks down there that want to hear what's going on. So,
you know, and in a way, it's, you know, I remember back during the days of the Vietnam, U.S. Aggression against Vietnam, or the war in Vietnam, as some like to neutrally term it, where, you know, I was trying to get all sides of the issue. But the problem with spending your time getting all sides of the issue, it's like saying, what about that argument that the Jews are being murdered in the concentration camps? Now, let's discuss that. And indeed, you know, you certainly have to discuss every issue. But at some point, if your dollars and your government is involved in these activities, you have to take a stand. And frankly, I lean toward the anti-smart meter side, but I did try to assure Keith I was going to try to be at least somewhat neutral. Maybe I'll turn the mic over to you if you're
perhaps
in the studio. We have a caller.
Mr. Neutrality.
Let's see if any smart meters are calling in. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Steve and Robert.
Hi, Steve and Robert. My name is Denise, and I was calling in tonight because I wanted to let you know that I was really outraged by what happened to the homeless man in Fullerton.
Yes.
Very devastated that anyone would treat anyone with such disrespect.
Denise, why don't you summarize for us what happened? Although, I've read the story, I've actually put it out on the Huff email list, and actually the Sentinel reprinted it today. So, I mean, it has gotten wide coverage, and it is in Fullerton. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to talk about what Officer Winston did to Curtis Chad in Santa Cruz that is still being uninvestigated. But please, tell us about Fullerton.
Well, all I can tell you about Fullerton is what I've seen in the media as well, and that was on several newscast reports that were local. It appeared that the man was a local and that everyone knew him, and he was a very kind person and had some, you know, who knows what type of issues. We all have problems right now with the economy and everything else going on. It's been really hard to deal with. All I know is that this man was staying at the bus terminal, and the police officers, from what I understand, didn't want him there. I did not hear anything about what the reason was, why they were so forceful with him, but I do know this, is that he pleaded for his life, and he pleaded for help, and some of his final words were calling Dad for help, and it's just a horrible travesty that any human being should be treated with such disrespect. And I feel very sad for the homeless. I was almost homeless myself this past year and a half, struggling after being injured at work and losing all my jobs, and I really got a taste of what it's like to be on the street. And I'll tell you, some of the people that I met on the street were the nicest people that were most helpful in trying to help me to know the ropes and to be friendly and kind to me.
Yeah, it's funny, Denise, sometimes how the people who have the least are willing to help you the most.
That's for sure. And I recently, I was lucky enough to be able, with attorneys, to get back on my feet and actually have a stable income now. I'm not rich, but I am not homeless, and I really feel very sad for the millions of Americans that are affected right now by job loss and are becoming homeless.
Denise, you and I met on Front Street about, a month and a half ago or 2 months ago?
Yes, Robert.
And I interviewed you, and I played your interview on the radio, I think, yeah.
Yes, you did,
You talked about your own situation things have gotten better for you? You're in lodging. Do you think, do you still have contacts with people you knew when you were nearly homeless, or were you ever actually homeless here in Santa Cruz?
Well, I was very close to it. My house was red tagged because of mold. And at the same time, I had injured my shoulder at my job, and I had problems getting any kind of economics from the company in which I was injured. And so I basically had to move out of the house with one arm, and luckily had one person who was willing to come forward to offer me housing just as a temporary situation, and I had pets and didn't want to lose them in the shelter, whatnot. The thing was, is I went to everyone that I could think of that could possibly help me, and I had several lists that were given to me with agencies that were supposed to be able to help me, but none of the agencies were able to help me. They, matter of fact, up until now, I've found, have up to 3-year waiting lists just to get on a list.
Now, wait a minute. You're not suggesting our good city council and the police department and the Danielle Long, the downtown social worker, that give out these lists so freely are giving you lists that aren't particularly helpful?
Well, I think she may be talking about maybe Section 8 housing waiting lists.
Oh, the Section 8 is still waiting. According to the disabled list, it's 2 to 4 years.
Yeah. How about the other lists? What lists are you talking about?
Well, I got lists from some of the groups in the area that were supposedly be able to help you with fine lodging.
Such as?
And, I don't remember right now all the names.
Homeless Service Center, perhaps?
And everyone that I called said, no, we have nothing. And even some of the rental places down here that are just basic rentals have a very long waiting list. They're actually trying to kind of send you out of the county to another place if you can get there. I really had no family that I could go to or stay with. And, I was an upstanding individual of Santa Cruz. I volunteer. I work 3 jobs. And, I just felt like, this is horrible. I ended up speaking with several of the people that were applying for benefits on Emmeline Street. Emmeline would not give me financial assistance, even though I had no income. And they were even trying to deny me food stamps for several months. I went without food. I had to find the food banks in the area, which weren't easy to come by. And luckily, some of the churches did have food available at certain times of the day, on certain days, if you could get a ride there. So basically, the system isn't working here in Santa Cruz. And I can understand from that experience how millions of people in the United States must feel. But this man, I think it's unjust right now that anyone should be treated as cruelly as this person was treated, or with no disrespect, when many of the homeless people I found from experience have problems that need treatment. And you'll find if you call to try to talk to somebody in a mental health situation here in Santa Cruz, that it's a 3 to 4 month waiting list just to be able to speak with somebody if you're upset and you need someone to talk to find out if you need medication, or, you're depressed because you lost your job and you're homeless. So a lot of these people I found are in pain, and that's why they drink. Many of them are trying to mask the pain, not just the mental pain, but the physical pain that they're feeling from physical ailments that they have that are not being treated. And they can't get in for any type of psychiatric or psychological care because the waiting list is so long. And it's not free if you go to someone else. So you're basically stuck back out on the street without getting any help at all.
You know, Denise, you mentioned earlier that your house was red tagged. Mm-hmm. You know, I had hoped to have on the line Claire Machado, mm-hmm. who recently, with a number of other folks, have successfully brought forward to the Board of Supervisors. They've successfully challenged the red tagging process of the Planning Commission of the county, mm-hmm. and that's a subject that property owners are particularly interested in, but it also impacts lower-income people, too. Mm-hmm. They often have their little slum units on these places, and not that I'm, there's also granny units and so forth, and I'm hoping to have her in the studio. She was supposed to be here today, but I probably... I lost contact with her, and I'm going to have to drag her in by the scruff of the neck at some future show. I thank you for calling in on this issue. Is there any, are you, you have any intention of, I know you're kind of following these issues and you're speaking out on these issues. Have you done any writing on these issues, or you have any suggestions as to what, you know, are there any groups you're forming to storm City Hall, perhaps?
No, I haven't actually done that, but I have been receiving the Huff emails and forwarding them on to other people that are very concerned about the homeless people and about what's happening to them, and I'm trying to make people aware of the situation. My friend has a large grove of organic fruit, and when the fruit is ripened, I've been collecting bags of fruit and just driving all around town, handing it out to homeless people.
Oh, good for you, man.
You know, it's not a lot, but I'll tell you, when I went down to Santa Cruz last week, I put it in certain people's packs that were just left there, probably in the library or whatnot, and I gave it to some people that were sitting on the street, and just the look in their face when they looked up at me as if someone actually cared enough to bring them something to eat. Not anyone denied getting a bag of fruit, and all of the homeless people I've given it to have given me thumbs up and a big smile on their face, which has been more reward than I could ever possibly have imagined. So people doing small steps like that in general, just going forward with anything that they might have, clothing or taking it down to the shelters.
You know, I might want to suggest to you, Denise,
great.
Yeah, me too. I there's a group that used to operate in Santa Cruz called Food Not Bombs that one of our Huff activists is trying to reactivate.
Good.
And you might be interested in working with him, at least donating some fruit, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
or giving him suggestions as to where he might be able to pick up food.
Sure.
If you want to leave your number on my line, this is true for anybody else who wants to help with this project, the Food Not Bombs, you can leave a message at 423-4833, 423-4833.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe we can hook you up and, you know, see how you feel. This is, you know, everybody has their own individual way of working out these things. And sometimes, you know, simply individual charity efforts are best. Everybody has their own way. But this is also something you might want to unite with other people on, particularly since Food Not Bombs is not just concerned with, you know, providing food to the grateful hungry, but also to, you know, emphasizing the disparity in priorities between funding the police department, funding the golf course, you know, funding projects that are, you know, developed for kickbacks for developers, desal projects, things of this sort, versus cutting off funding for even the pitiful amount we have for homeless shelters that you notice give huge waiting lists, and there's no meaningful campground or real shelter for people in terms of, let's say, the majority of homeless people. And then instead we have a massive security guards, police, bad laws, and so forth that are used instead. Food Not Bombs is interested in these issues in different cities, particularly you may have heard recently because of what we've talked about on the radio in Orlando, Florida, Food Not Bombs being arrested for serving free food. People here are not arrested for serving free food. They are pressured to stay out of the public places, and people who are, of course, being increasingly harassed, ticketed, and even arrested for, and even beaten for sitting on the sidewalk near a building.
I saw that. That's awful.
And it's not actually, I mean, you know, it's not that they're sitting near a building, it's that they don't jump up and respond with sufficient yes sir, three bags full submissiveness
right.
to police authority, which police officers somehow feel they have a right to expect from everybody these days because, you know, it's they're big frontline crime fighters and so forth.
Well, where are the homeless supposed to go? I mean, they have to sleep.
Somewhere else, out of town.
And they
I hear
have
there's
to eat.
Accommodations in Hawaii. All they got to do is, you know, a stiff swim will get them there.
Very sad. They need to be somewhere. They need to have a place. They need to at least have the ordinance where they can sleep during the day somewhere and not get into trouble.
Well, that is the ordinance at present, theoretically, that you're allowed to sleep during the day between 8:30 a.m. and 11 p.m. In fact, however, several homeless people, when they tried to do that downtown, were pursued by police, city attorneys, and a gaggle of city employees. I'm talking about Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon last year. Although the judge eventually threw it out, he has instead heightened pressure against these two with a permanent injunction. But let me thank you for calling in and get back to Steve here, who is about to dash off to a meeting.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in, Denise.
Thank you very much, and God bless you for all the hard work that you do, and God bless all the homeless. They're supporting you. Everyone I talk to tells me They just think that, thank God that you're up there trying to get them some rights.
I agree. I am the greatest.
Keep
There's
up
no
the
question.
Good work.
Thanks.
And
thank
listen,
you.
Give a call to my home phone and leave your number, and I'll put you in touch with Casey.
Thank you.
All right. So phone lines are open, 427-3772, and you are, do you have something you wanted to say? Any thoughts?
No, I'm just listening to Denise. It's nice to know that people are concerned and that are willing to become active in things like food dot bombs or creating some new emergency shelter space, trying to make sure food banks are well-stocked and available, and maybe develop some financial resources. And there are people around town working on that, but it's slow-going. As you know, Paul Lee, after whom the Paul Lee Loft is named, and Merlin Rebelais are attempting to find some additional shelter space. They're looking around for a place. There's a group in town which I'm affiliated with, although I'm not a religious guy. The Association of Faith Communities is a group of many of the churches in Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County, looking to create some additional shelter space through the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which was operating, I think, a couple years back, and trying to find some additional shelter space, and then was kind of decommissioned, and now we're trying to kind of reconstitute that and get it going. So there's good work being done, but it's difficult work, and it's slow going.
You're much more optimistic about this than I am, but then again, you're running for city council. Here, however, is a caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Steve. Should I say smile a while, Steve, and Uncle Robert. Hello. Whoops. Well, maybe I talked a little too much. Could be I'm scaring people away with my intro, but do try calling again, caller again. The call-in number is 427-3772. And I'll be here for another hour and a half fielding calls. And again, we should have an interesting show on Sunday, although I'm not quite sure how smart meters relates to homeless civil rights, but I guess...
Well, I have, in my mobile home in which I live, I have one of the no smart meter signs in my window, so I am proudly in no smart meter zone.
Have you been run away from your live oak perch yet there, Plate?
No. We're still hanging about town.
It is illegal in the county to habitate a vehicle on the public streets. Are you aware of this fact?
Say it ain't so.
I wish I could.
Yes, I wish I could.
So in other words, you're a criminal along with the rest of your ilk. Is that what you're saying?
And how else would I qualify to appear on your show?
Indeed. We have only the criminal class.
Crime
here.
Criteria.
We try to, you know, keep a higher standard than the politicians whose crimes are just too tiresome to
discuss.
At least
I'm honest about mine.
Indeed. And it's one of those what they call crimes of necessity. So I have a couple of articles here. I was going to play the song Glad to Be Gay, which is a great song, which I actually heard on Thomas Levitt's show on Sunday. And I
that would be our great and good friend Thomas Equality Levitt,
the very same.
Himself a former city council candidate.
That's the guy. Thomas Levitt is does a show every Sunday from 7:30 to 9:30 called The Wake Up Call. Though sometimes, when asked to admit, it's a bit later.
He's
than
the
7:30.
Fellow you have to elbow out of the way in order to get the perch high above.
No, you don't have to elbow him. He's usually rushing out of the studio. Uncle Dennis is the one who kind of. Well, Uncle Dennis will be coming on. Actually, I don't think he'll be on this week. He'll be on. I think R. Duck is taking Uncle Dennis's show after mine, which is.
So we won't this evening be going from the cream.
We'll be going from the Norse to the Duck, and that's going to be happening at 8 o'clock. Here's a song that I think you may enjoy. Again, it's called Sing If You're Glad to Be Gay. This is for people who are gay and people who are not gay, people who are sad, people who are straight, you name it. So it's a positive and I think a powerful song. Let's see if it actually plays. I think we got the wrong one, so we're going to have to have to work on this one.
Not a golden moment in free radio engineering.
Indeed. We have our problems, I have to admit. Let's see if this one might work better.
Leave our mics up so we can sing along?
You can sing along if we can actually get this thing to...
Positive it's running at the right speed?
It's a questionable situation. I'm still working on it here. And I think we actually have the wrong we clicked on the wrong link, so we are going to go back to the missing link. And hopefully that should happen shortly.
The missing link, yes. He's a bridge builder, a consensus maker.
The missing link is the link that will bring us to Glad to Be Gay. But I think it's going to take a little doing to do that. So while I'm seeking out the missing link, I want to make sure that we actually are doing the right thing. Let's see, are we? Yes, we're at least back at neutral here. Let's play it again and see if we can actually get to the right place.
So we haven't actually lost ground in this process.
Well, we've lost a little ground. We've lost time. We're probably the people who are listening are not
as... Well, it's another 45 seconds I'll never get back. So.
And, you know, we know your time is valuable. What is this meeting you're going to that we should be informed on if we should be?
Of course, everybody is aware that the city has directed the water department to build them a desalination plant as an alternative water source to protect against future drought conditions and ensure our basically water sustainability is the issue in town. And we're balancing the debate. My group, Desal Alternatives, is...
You're going to have to hush up. Glad to Be Gay is coming on. We know that's more important. You may dance if you wish to.
I'm going to dance out of the studio. The best in the world. I don't believe one of these stories I've heard about them raiding our boats for no reason at all. Lining the customers up by the wall. Picking out people, knocking them down. Resisting arrest as they're kicked on the ground. Searching their houses. And we shortly are going to have a caller on the air who, he's going to introduce himself and talk about issues that he's experienced with respect to Santa Cruz City Rangers. Are you there, caller?
I am.
And what's your name?
I have broadcast in the area as Colonel Terry.
Colonel Terry. So what's the word, Colonel?
Well, number one, I'm sympathetic to the homeless as a caring, compassionate, progressive citizen. But significantly... I'm a retired Air Force full colonel who has worked at the White House, among other things, and I am not homeless. But I was casually dressed, having a sandwich and a beer, quite some distance from any Santa Cruz beach in a totally open area where there was nothing that said you can't consume alcohol here. Nothing at all. One of the Santa Cruz Rangers came up to me as I'm having my sandwich and my beer looking at the sunset, not even on the beach, and it says you can't drink that here. And I said, well, I don't see a sign visible. I won't get into all the details because I may litigate it. I may find the ACLU, among some other things.
For sure. You know, by the way, if you ever want...
I was so infuriated. Now, I was really casually dressed. And I had sandals on and shorts, a rumpled shirt, and about 3 days' worth of, you know, beard growth, being inside writing and other things, et cetera. So I'd let my beard grow for 3 days is the point. And, yeah, I look like a quintessential, typical Santa Cruz homeless person, arguably. I hadn't gotten a haircut in a few days, a week or three either. The point is, I said to this guy, excuse me, I didn't know, and I'll be happy to find. And I went and took my beer and put it in the trunk of my car, putting the top back on it. And I came back to do my sandwich, finish a sandwich. He demanded to see an ID from me. Do you have an ID and an address, et cetera? And I won't get any more details than that other than the guy could have just done, I'm sorry, the Santa Cruz Ranger, I gather they have some police powers, he was carrying a weapon and a badge, wearing a badge and a uniform. I was astonished at his presumptive rudeness to me and the attitude of, I'm driving you off the beach. That I could see it in his eyes, so on and so forth. And I immediately sensed, if I were a homeless person in Santa Cruz, I guess I undergo this all the time.
Unfortunately, you're right, Colonel.
I found an ID for him, offered him identification, and he asked, you know, what was my occupation? And I said, well, primarily I'm a retired senior Air Force officer. Okay. And at that, he still went and wrote up a citation for me, which they weren't able to tell me much when I went down to the courthouse to ascertain, but I have pulled the statutes involved, and I was not in violation, as I can tell reading them.
What was the code?
I'm sorry.
What was the code section, Colonel?
I don't know.
I mean, what was the nature? What crime was it? Open container?
Alcohol. He wrote in the ticket. Alcohol. Okay, drinking alcohol.
Drinking alcohol in a public
place. In a public location. Okay.
And this was on in a park in a beach in
no,
the
no,
city.
No, no, it was arguably at a beach near a beach location. But I was on the public street,
mm-hmm.
although not on the street. I was on a sidewalk area separated by a stone wall, brick wall.
And this was within the city limits?
Not even on the sand.
Within the city limits or outside?
I was the county limits, apparently.
Okay. And so this was this a city ranger or some kind of county
ranger? County ranger. Santa Cruz County Ranger.
Huh. Interesting.
Patrolling the beach.
Wow.
You know, he could have said, I'm sorry, we don't allow consumption of alcohol this close to the beach or whatever. And fine. And, no, he had to. I really felt like the guy was acting like I'm the enforcer Gestapo. He was the enforcer Gestapo. And rather than just, if there is such a, there is a rule. I went and found it, but I'm not sure I was violating the formalities of it. And I gather there's a fine, although I went down to the courthouse, the lady couldn't tell me what the fine was until I had waited 30 days to process the paper.
That's kind of ridiculous, isn't it?
I am one annoyed, indignant, highly informed, intelligent, sophisticated citizen.
I mean, not only do they abuse you in the park, you know, in the public area that's we're supposed to have access to and treat you like a six-year-old who's not allowed to drink, but they also, once you arrive at the court to try to find out what's going on,
yes.
Won't give you any information.
Line, you'll have to wait till we send you something.
Right. I mean, what they're really saying is, I think they're probably too lazy to figure out the bail, or their system is too convoluted to figure it out. Yeah.
My focus in the call is, he wanted to harass. He wanted to enforce the letter of whatever he could find. He made a phone call to ask somebody about what to put down. I could hear him asking that question on his cell phone. He wanted to, by goodness, make it clear to a person who appeared homeless that there was some infraction you had done, rather than give me the courtesy of, I'm sorry, we don't allow open consumption of alcohol in public places in the county or near, as close to the beach as you are. That would have been the reasonable, the polite, and courteous. He was discourteous to me and excessively insistent that he was going to find out what he could write up about me, write up against me on a ticket, because he presumed I was a homeless person. That's my call.
Do you think also that perhaps you were not sufficiently subservient to his authority?
I was very courteous to him.
Hmm.
Okay? But he asked me my occupation. And I said, primarily, I'm a retired senior Air Force officer.
Okay? He didn't believe you?
Well, I said, I'll show you ID. I offered to go get that in my car. And ultimately, I did. Okay?
Did his manner change at all?
No.
Hmm,
and he also insisted on confirming my address, so we waited for that. And I presume through my California driver's license. At any rate, I call of sympathy because, you know, I had thought many of the... I wasn't unconvinced. I happen to know Ed Fry and think the world of him. He's really a good person, a very well-meaning attorney and advocate.
Uh-huh.
And I participate with Ed in the Penny University activity, which is Monday afternoons, and have for a couple of years now. So I've heard the discussion periodically there. I've observed the homeless people being provided meals and so forth. And there's no reason why Santa Cruz County and its substantial wealth and circumstances can't provide some degree of adequate homeless shelter, as the county does provide some of that. And
not
frankly,
much.
There's no reason why all of us who have better economic circumstances can't pay a little bit in taxes to provide for that. I think that there has to be a dialogue with the homeless community about, conduct. And I think, although I don't see a reason to feel that's a large issue, but someone like Ed Fry is a liaison point between the homeless people and the formalities of the city government and even the public.
Well, if he's not in jail, which he is, of course.
I know. And I was going to, when I heard about that, I said, let's go have a protest outside the jail, Free Ed Fry,
right,
with signs and banners. The judge was clearly excessive, in my experience and observation in life, to incarcerating Ed, and in apparently the assigned penalties and fines, if any. Again, we could be more compassionate as a civilization, and locally as a community, and should be. But I wanted to call in because I, if you will, in the costume and appearance of a homeless person with a beer and a sandwich, not even at the beach, not even in visible view of anything that said I couldn't, found myself abused rather than treated courteously by this person with police authority employed by Santa Cruz County.
Colonel Terry, what I'd like you to do, if you might consider it, is getting in touch with my prior co-host who's left the studio, but who is who's gone through law school and has worked for 20 years in a law office in San Jose, to kind of talk with him about what happened, because I think it can be your case can be a significant... It might be significant in terms of dealing with the cases of other people who are not as well situated economically and socially as yourself.
I agree with you. There are some ACLU-style challenges to this come to mind. How do I contact him, and who is that?
His name is, as I swallow my last piece of fruit here, Steve Plaich, P-L-E-I-C-H. Plaich rhymes with H. And he is, he works on a thing called the Homeless Legal Assistance Project. He actually is the Homeless Legal Assistance Project. And he's willing to be called. He has a cell phone he carries with him, and he's quite accessible. You can probably call him tonight.
Are you comfortable giving that to me on the phone?
Oh, of course. Because I want other people to know that so they too can call in. His number is 334-8692. 334-8692. And that's an area code 831. Say it again?
831-334-86, as we say in the Air Force, 9 or 2.
Yeah,
okay,
for sure.
Fine. I will give him a call. And in addition, I was going to get paperwork ready for my homework ready for Ed Fry to look at.
That's good, too. Although, as Ed is struggling to appeal. And
no, I know that.
But you probably talked to him already.
No, I know that. And I when I saw him at the Penn University after his wrongful incarceration, I said, well, welcome home.
I mean, he's got 4 to 6 months coming up of incarceration. And more important, frankly, than Ed, but, because although we all, you know, it's most high profile with Ed, people out there every night face this kind of prosecution. If they resist the authority, the false authority of the police agencies on this issue, which is a claim that you're not allowed to sleep anywhere at all.
You can probably tell it's more sophisticated than the average bear.
Uh-huh.
And I could tell this guy was hoping I would do something that would allow him to arrest me.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was hoping I would be reactive enough. And I thought about doing that to do the test case thing. I mean, it crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I elected not to because I really had people waiting for me to.
It's always that way, you know, Colonel Terry. You gotta fit it in, figure out the priorities, and you know, fight your battles where you can.
Sure.
I think I'm glad you're bringing this issue publicly forward. I'm glad you're looking at a little legal counsel. I wouldn't, you know, encourage you to spend your life on it. Of course.
No, of course not. But I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna roll over.
Good.
And I
good.
But I, as I say, I clearly be crystallized for me the abuse that the Santa Cruz homeless apparently do experience from the police.
What you're likely to find, unfortunately, is this law, which essentially reduces anyone who hasn't got access to a house or a hotel or a paid place to secrete themselves away. It's illegal for them to consume alcoholic beverages. Homeless people, as you know, have campsites. It's illegal for them to consume it at their campsites. And you're saying, well, you know, if they pre-approach me more, you know, with more courtesy, with more gentility, with more reasonableness, that would have been certainly a factor in your considering. As far as I'm concerned, I take a step beyond that.
I agree. He was hoping he could find a reason to put me in his Ranger vehicle and put handcuffs on me.
And I think a significant fact here is, I mean, it's not just, you know, naturally people are, middle-class people like ourselves, I'm middle-class myself, you know, are concerned about, you know, homeless people being treated like shit. But the fact also is the laws, because the Constitution says you can't make such discriminations explicitly, goes after everybody and allows essentially the police selective enforcement power. So they have to say, and no one can have alcohol outside. But if you've been dressed up in your uniform,
right,
you know, and you had three guys with you, the Ranger would probably have said, you know, you're not allowed to, you know, do this.
Exactly.
You would have had, in a sort of a 6-year-old manner, had to say, yes, sir, three bags full, even though there's no reason on earth why grown men and grown women shouldn't be allowed to drink a beer, provided they're not beating each other up and, you know, destroying property in public. I mean, to me, you know, and of course, those laws, as you point out, you didn't point this out, but I think it's true, are created to give them an opening to go after a certain class of person under the pretext they're going after behavior, which is the real kind of hypocrisy here.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
Well, thank you, Colonel Terry.
Anyway,
I appreciate it.
Well, listen, keep up the good work. I'll listen to your program more frequently.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And that's Colonel Terry talking about his experiences getting an open container ticket, sounds like. Although it may be a county ordinance rather than a city one if it happened in the county. Well, maybe I'll hear more about that later from Colonel Terry or from Ed Fry. Who knows? You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is the show Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. The bathrobe for, let's show how ridiculous the sleeping ban is, Robespierre, as the idea of a revolutionary leader who was actually probably something of a control power freak, but who was fighting on his own way for rights for people. I guess you could say the same thing about Stalin. It's always a difficult matter finding any heroes among leaders who actually get any recognition. But you got to look at the good side and the bad side and all that sort of thing. So, call-in number, as I said, is 427-3772. I'm going to play a few street interviews now so we can stay current with that or try to actually catch up. The new Street Spirit is out, the August Street Spirit, which doesn't have any stories from Santa Cruz. It's 8 pages long, much shorter than it used to be, but it should be available in the library or from Street Spirit vendors, if we have any. If you're homeless and you want to, or poor and you want to vend Street Spirit, You can sell them for $1 a piece and keep all the profits. Get in touch with me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'm also going to pass on the word to the Sub Rosa Cafe and to Father Joel at the Monday evening Calvary Episcopal meal, I guess. It's a church at the Red Church meal until Cynthia Matthews and her minions try to are successful in closing it down, which I don't think they will be. So you can look for Street Spirit at the Calvary Episcopal Church if Joel is up for that, Joel Miller, the pastor, or at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, and or you can contact me at the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Going to get back to a few older interviews from June in hopes of... Are we actually at this? I think we are... Let's see if we have the proper cords in the studio that I'm not sure what goes where, but I think I can figure them out. Let's see if we're in the right place. We're going to tune in on some street interviews, and you're always invited to call in. Calls generally take priority, though I may try to hold your call briefly until the end of the street interview bit. Give me a call if you'd like, 427-3772. Well, my wish is granted. Hi there, you're on free radio.
Hey, I called a while ago, but I hung up because I was not expecting you to answer.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm here. You're on the air. Beware. Or be aware, I should say.
Be aware. I'm calling right now from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
I have been part of an encampment up here for the past 3 weeks, and I got this number from Sam and Violet, who I think are friends of the station.
Can you speak up a little louder?
Yeah. Is this the Freak Radio?
This is Santa Cruz Freak Radio. It is, yes.
Cool, just making sure. All right, so I was just wondering if I could do a call-out for people, any radicals or any folks in
sure.
the Santa Cruz area. Pretty much there's been recent desecration up in Flagstaff is that this ski resort, Snowbowl, is expanding their lodge and in the process clear-cutting 74 acres of trees on this mountain and pumping 180 million gallons of wastewater and reclaimed water up here a year to make fake snow. And this is all happening on what is a sacred site for 13 indigenous tribes. So it's a matter of environmental issues, a matter of indigenous issues, and just their lack of respect for the community. So we've been up here for 3 weeks now trying to stop the construction and also bearing witness to it by doing, media, taking pictures, videos, doing whatever possible to make them stop. And this next week, starting tomorrow, we're having a week of action going until next week, Tuesday, where we will be doing rallies in Flagstaff, the city, and up on the mountain. This is a call-out, I guess, if anybody from the area can make it down here and bring support. We have a base camp set up right now where we can host however many people we need to. There's a kitchen, there's camping. We're following all the camping rules just so that we can have a presence here. So.
And how can people get in touch to get more information?
They could go to truesnow.org. It is run by a friend of ours, and it has all the updates on what's going on here. It's a blog. We tweet from the mountain to Facebook, and you can find Cook Shack on Facebook also, which is the name of the
How do you spell it?
Cook Shack. It's C-O-O-K-S-H-A-C-K, and truesnow.org is just truesnow.org, and those are updates. Daily about what's going on here.
You know, the show that follows mine, what's your name, by the way?
My name's Ari.
Ari?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Robert Ari. Howdy.
Hi.
Hi. The show that follows mine, From the Cream to the Dregs, is a musical show, but it also is usually run by an environmental activist named Dennis, Uncle Dennis. Dennis, he's out of town, but I think the person who's covering your show would be very interested in possibly, more important, Dennis's audience would be more interested in this issue, although, you know, I'm happy to put it out. You're really this show is about homeless civil rights in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, people aren't interested in other issues at the same time. And, you know, the destruction of the environment impacts everybody, including homeless people. Often environmentalists are pitted against homeless people in urban areas. You know, we want a lot of green stuff, but no, you know, human beings, that they're not too green, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or no poor human beings, you know, around, you know. That becomes less of a priority. So the show that you might want to call in on, and just the same number from 8 to 11, is From the Cream to the Dregs, is coming up next.
Okay. And
in the meantime, I'll pass on the word that, you know, you are interested in a shout-out for the next week of actions, where people can get more information at www.truesnow.org or Facebook Cook Shack.
Yeah.
And the issue has to do with the... clear-cutting an area to put up a much-needed ski lodge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. I mean...
Well, I'll do that. I'll call back during that show. Thank you for the information. Thanks for letting me be on here.
Sure. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye. And, yes, it's always glad to get new information, and I'm wondering if my... machine is working here. It looks like it is. Let's take a musical break and then get into some street interviews. But it looks like I have a bad disc, or perhaps a bad CD player. It's a little unclear what the story is here. We're trying. It's trying to read. It's trying to play. It's reading no disc. So we're having equipment problems here in the studio. So it's rather than treat you to a musical tune of my own, I'm going to whip right into some interviews.
The wisest choice. We understand marijuana is a very dangerous drug which creates massive amounts of crime, and therefore it must be stopped at all costs.
Wow.
I will hear no objection to that.
No, I just thought that was, I don't know. I mean, I never thought marijuana was that dangerous.
No, it's not. Obviously not. Alcohol is much more toxic than marijuana. It's more prejudice and fear. I mean, you know, I mean, abuse of any medication, drug, or recreational item, television, video games.
You can have its problems, I think.
Chocolate, you know, you name it. It right. Obviously can have bad effects. But, you know, I mean, to make it criminal, to distribute it, to possess it, is police state stuff.
Yeah, I don't
need
even,
to stop.
I actually think people should have a latitude to do more dangerous drugs, if that's what they want.
Dangerous drugs, you mean possibly like the antidepressants that are being used to drug up the
kids?
Good point, yeah. Forced on
kids. Well, I mean, you know, you can obviously...
This is a dialogue with a man called Quintus Cornish, although I think he now calls himself Rob Cornish. He's a petitioner who I ran into in back of Trader Joe's in downtown Santa Cruz. The parking lot area is now a no-go zone for petitioners and leafleters. Apparently, the management company, police, private security, and the businesses, including the much ballyhooed liberal Trader Joe's, have gotten together to ban leafleters and petitioners and solicitors specifically from that area. So I was telling Quintus about this, and... You're going to hear him, we're going to be discussing that. Well, we ranged over a variety of topics, and I played the first part of this interview last time, and the show airs twice a week. Sunday, it would have been Sunday morning from 9:30 to 1, sometime in that huge spot. And by the way, if you're looking for back shows on the air, they're now accessible on the Huff website at www.huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz.org. And you can click on the name of the show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The site is being reworked under some some helpful and hopefully expertise-ridden folks who know what they're doing. And we're going to hopefully bring the darn site up to date and make more archives available. And who knows, maybe actually bring it into the 2011s. Right now, I think it's stuck in 2005 or 2006. I think there's something from 2007 on there, but... Although the sad thing is these issues don't change a lot. We have the same criminalization issues, but the names are important because if it's your brother or your sister or your friend that gets harassed, gets the treatment that Colonel Terry gets or that the Fullerton homeless man who was beaten to death by police gets, it strikes home a lot more sharply and quickly and strongly than if it happened 4 years ago to someone else.
You can be prescribed, you know, Oxycontin or, I don't know, Adderall, benzodiazepine.
Yeah, those are usually done because of, you know, painful conditions, I think, more than anything else. But so anyway, I came up here originally to talk to you because I was impressed to see for the first time in a while a real live petitioning person here.
The people haven't been petitioning.
I found petitioners on Pacific Avenue. They said, we don't gum back code at Trader Joe's in the parking lot anymore because of threats of arrest that, you know, we get, and being told by the property manager, told by Trader Joe's staff to leave, looked at in a nasty way, and so forth. And, you know, kind of, it's...
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been here in over a year, like I said.
And you've only been here for a few moments, right?
Yeah, I was here for about 5 minutes.
Well, we'll see how you do. I want a full report on this whole situation. Give me a call later.
Yeah, well, actually, here, come over here. I'm going to carry... Well, let me go with that.
Let me get my stuff, too. So we're continuing our conversation at somewhat of a remove from the front
of Trader
Joe's.
I think they ran off somebody that was fundraising, and I guess his thought was they weren't allowed to fundraise, but you actually were allowed to petition.
Well, that may be the case, but I think...
Well, this was just the impression of the security guard. I don't know, you know.
I don't know what actually happened. Yeah, and this happened a year ago. You say that somebody else was run off, and you were not hassled here when you petitioned about a year ago.
Right.
It is true that about a year ago and 4 months ago, ACLU canvassers were ticketed here.
Yeah, it may have been the ACLU that was run off, and, you know, and they might have... You know, the truth is there's so many case laws on it. There's so much case law on this stuff. You know, people aren't even really sure what the law is.
I think it's probably gotten worse. And the decision protecting petitioners in public shopping centers, the Prunier decision, has been somewhat weakened. But I think there's still some remnants of it there, aren't there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you could say it's been weakened by some decisions, but there's some decisions that probably uphold it. I think it honestly gets down to the... I think it's probably a lot of police departments and city attorneys and DAs don't mess with it because it's too much hassle, but, you know.
We'll see what happens in Santa Cruz because I just gave you my card, and I'm hoping that you will call me whether you're hassled or not. If you'll give me a call and just say, hey, I had a great day, you know, security guard came over and bought me a Pepsi or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, be fine. Or, you know, no,
you
three
know,
squad cars.
I was at a Trader Joe's in San Francisco, and they kind of came out and, you know, gave us a little bit of hassle. But
what happened there?
They came out and they had some court cases they claimed they won, and they were, you know, we could call the cops on you, but why don't you just stand a little bit off to the side? You know, we'll have a compromise. And I think I said that was fine with me, and that was kind of that. But, you know, I mean, another petitioner showed up, and he was kind of giving them a hard... I mean, he was a little snippy about it, for sure. I don't know if he really intended... I get a lot of that, though. Even the store I went to, Molly Stone and Palo Alto, the guy came out, and he was like... Told me it was private property, and I had to leave immediately. And then he was like, and could you please stand off to the side? Which... You know, I mean, what the hell does that mean? Leave immediately, but please stand off to the side. You know, it's like, I get a lot.
A little confusing.
Well, I think this. I mean, I think these store owners, you know, store managers know that you do have some legal rights, but they'll, yeah, sometimes they'll do some really strange stuff. You know, I don't know.
So, what happened to this fellow? Did he get hassled in San Francisco, or did he continue to stay there?
Oh, you mean me?
No, the other guy who said that was a little more snippy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did give him a hard time, but, you know.
He stayed or he left?
Yeah, no, he left. You know, he stayed. Yeah, he didn't.
And they didn't call the police?
If they called them, maybe they didn't show up. Yeah.
Well, we'll see if you can endure here in Santa Cruz.
Okay. I guess I'll give it a try. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of just doing a test to see how well it was going to go anyway.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. Don't let me frighten you away. I mean, it could well be they've changed their policy. It's possible. Though a couple weeks ago,
I know. We've talked in the past.
And we've been talking with?
Robbie Cornish or Quintus Cornish or, you know.
Ah, yes, I remember. A Roman name or a Latin-sounding name.
Oh, yeah, that's my real name. I don't know. I mean, I've gone by Robbie most of my life because it got, you know, Quintus got me in so many fights growing up in West Virginia, but...
Weird shit. Thank you, Quintus, a.k.a. Robbie.
Okay, well, it was good to see
you. So here I am again about 20 minutes later talking with, it's Quintius or Quintus?
Let me
talk with you on the fly because I want to make sure we don't lose this. So we talked earlier, and you, a few minutes ago, were approached by Trader Joe's employee and what appeared to be perhaps a security guard.
I didn't notice the security guard, but yeah, the Trader Joe's manager, yeah.
What did he say to you?
He said that they've figured out their paperwork and they basically don't allow any kind of, you know, petitioning or a variety of other activities there anymore. And I don't really know. I do vaguely remember that the city, you know, that there are some stores that had successfully been having people run off in Santa Cruz. And, I don't know. I mean, anymore, it seems to shake down to the city and what the city attorney decides to do. I think there's so much case law that they can really go on either side of it they want, you know?
So now you feel this time, now you're becoming a little reluctant to want to really pursue this.
Well, I honestly just want to make sure I don't have a warrant before I... Definitely, but I'd probably just ask what exactly is going on in Santa Cruz, you know, somebody as well.
Fair enough. We'll get an update on that.
But I've gone online to look up the Pruneyard decision and see what the situation is, Wikipedia's take on it. And I'm going to still looking for something that came out this spring, which I don't even know if anything did come out this spring. But I'm going to see if I have can find anything specific. Let's see what we got here. Pruneyard decision versus shopping center versus Robbins is the actual, I think it's, yeah, Pruneyard shopping center versus Robbins, and I'll read a little bit about this for those who are interested. It's a seminal and important case, and here's what Wikipedia has to say about it. Pruneyard shopping center versus Robbins, 1980, was a U.S. Supreme Court decision issued on June 9th, which arose out of a free speech dispute between the Pruneyard Shopping Center in Campbell, California, that's right near San Jose, and several local high school students who wished to solicit signatures for a petition against UN General Assembly Resolution 3379, which, if I take a look at it, if I can get this... it determined that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination. This might have been a... sort of a pro-Zionist group opposing the UN resolution. But the broader principle, of course, is the right to petition generally for whatever your concern is. That is to say, under the First Amendment of the Constitution, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances and to use the public spaces to gather signatures and put out your message in that way. In American constitutional law, the Wikipedia article continues, the Pruneyard decision is famous for its role in establishing two important rules. First, under the California Constitution, individuals may peacefully exercise their right to free speech in parts of private shopping centers regularly held open to the public, subject to reasonable regulations adopted by the parking centers. In the case of Trader Joe's, by the way, there's no regulations whatsoever. There's just an absolute ban. Under the U.S. Constitution, this is number two, states can provide their citizens with broader rights in their constitutions than under the federal constitution, so long as those rights do not infringe on any federal constitutional rights. This holding was possible because California's constitution contains an affirmative right of free speech, which has been liberally interpreted by the Supreme Court of California, while the federal Constitution's First Amendment contains only a negative command to Congress to not abridge the freedom of speech. This distinction was significant because the U.S. Supreme Court had already held that under the federal First Amendment, there was no implied right of free speech within a private shopping center. The Pruneyard case, therefore, raised the question of whether an implied right of free speech could arise under a state constitution without conflicting with the federal constitution. In answering yes to that question, the court rejected the shopping center's argument that California's broader free speech right amounted to a taking of the shopping center under federal constitutional law. And the relevant portion of the California Constitution is every person, this is in our Constitution, supposedly our Constitution, the California Constitution, every person may freely speak, write, and publish his or her sentiments on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of this right. A law may not restrain or abridge liberty of speech or press. And that's Article 1, Section 2. Article 1, Section 3 is people have the right to petition government for redress of grievances. The vote to uphold the California decision was unanimous, although three justices disagreed with part of the reasoning of Justice William Rehnquist's opinion for the majority. Justices Thurgood Marshall, Byron White, and Harry Blackmun filed separate concurring opinions back in 1980. Because of the Pruneyard case, people who visit shopping centers in California may regularly encounter people seeking money or attention for various causes, including charitable solicitations, qualifying petitions for amendments to the state constitution, which is what Rob Cornish or Quintus Cornish was doing, voter registration drives, and sometimes a beggar. In turn, many shopping centers have posted signs to explain they do not endorse the views of people exercising that right to free speech, and if patrons do not give them money, the speakers will go away. And there's a quote of a, there is, however, for example, a sign that says, here's a Walmart sign, please do not contribute to solicitors. Walmart apologizes for any inconvenience caused by solicitors outside our store. We do not advocate their view or methods of expression. Their presence in our property is currently permitted by California court decisions. If you object to the presence of these solicitors, contact your state assembly person. So, in a way, you might say Walmart is more liberal than Trader Joe's, CVS, Mobo Sushi, you name it, all the stores that collude, apparently, or have expressed no public objection to the policy of suspending the California Constitution in the large parking lot in back of Trader Joe's in downtown Santa Cruz. Here's some more about the Pruneyard decision. Although 39 other states have free speech clauses in their constitutions that look like California's, indeed, California borrowed its clause from a similar one in the New York Constitution, at least 13 of those states have declined to follow California in extending the right of free speech into private shopping centers. In refusing to follow Pruneyard, the state Supreme Courts of New York and Wisconsin both attacked it as unprincipled and whimsical. In 2003, the European Court of Human Rights also considered and refused to follow Pruneyard in a United Kingdom case. Only New Jersey, Colorado, and Massachusetts have followed California, albeit with some reservations. In a 2000 decision, Puerto Rico, a U.S. territory, also adopted Pruneyard's right of free speech. Although the case was complicated by the presence of a branch office of a government agency, Puerto Rico Telephone, since privatized, in the shopping center, the Mayagüez Mall. Some commentators have suggested the Pruneyard rule could be applied to speech on the Internet, including speech activities in virtual worlds like Linden Labs' Second Life, although the courts have not addressed this theory. In the two decades since Pruneyard was decided, the Supreme Court of California has become much more conservative, especially after three liberal justices, including Chief Justice Rose Byrd, were removed by the electorate in 1986 for their opposition to the death penalty. In the 2001 Golden Gateway case, a 4-3 majority of the court significantly narrowed Pruneyard by holding, for a variety of reasons, that California's free speech right does not apply to private apartment complexes. Yet, they also refused to overrule Pruneyard. Thus, California's right of free speech in private shopping centers still survives. Naturally, the shopping center industry strongly detests the Pruneyard decision. I guess you can add Trader Joe's and CVS to that, or at least Trader Joe's, since it has resulted in numerous test cases by protesters in California and elsewhere trying to find the boundaries of the Pruneyard rule. Shopping centers have regularly imposed restrictions on unwanted solicitors and appealed the resulting legal cases in the hopes of convincing the California judiciary that Pruneyard should be overturned or at least limited.
Since Golden Gateway, decisions by the intermediate courts of appeal have generally limited the scope of the Pruneyard rule to the actual facts of the original case. For example, starting in 1997, the parking lots of many Costco warehouse club stores in California became sites of conflict involving a large number of political activist groups who had gradually become aware of their rights under Pruneyard. In 1998, Costco's management imposed several restrictions, including a complete ban on soliciting at standalone stores, a rule that no group or person could use Costco premises for free speech more than 5 days out of any 30, and the complete exclusion of solicitors on the 34 busiest days of the year. In 2002, these restrictions were upheld as reasonable by the Court of Appeals for the Fourth Appellate District, and the Supreme Court of California denied review. Costco's standalone stores lacked the social congregation, attributes of the multi-tenant shopping center at issue in Pruneyard. As for the restrictions on the stores in shopping centers, don't go away, As for the restriction in shopping centers, they were held to be reasonable because Costco had developed a strong factual record at trial which proved that hordes of unwanted solicitors had significantly damaged its reputation, obstructed access to its stores, and traumatized Costco employees. Kind of hard to believe, but let's go on with that. In 2007, the Supreme Court of California confronted the Pruneyard decision once more in the context of a complex labor dispute involving San Diego's Fashion Valley Mall and the San Diego Union Tribune. On December 24, 2007, a 4-3 majority of a sharply divided court once again refused to overrule Pruneyard and instead ruled that under the California Constitution, a union's right of free speech in a shopping center includes the right to hand out leaflets urging patrons to boycott one of the shopping center's tenants. Justice Ming Chin, in his dissent, joined by Justices Marvin Baxter and Carol Corrigan, expressed sympathy with several of the most common critiques of the Pruneyard decision. Quote, Pruneyard was wrong when decided in the nearly three decades that have since elapsed. Jurisdictions throughout the nation have overwhelmingly rejected it. We should no longer ignore this tide of history. The time has come for us to forthrightly overrule Pruneyard and rejoin the rest of the nation in this important area of the law. Private property should be treated as private property, not as public free speech zone. In 2010, the California Court of Appeal in the Third Appellate District, in an opinion authored by then-Justice Tenney Canty Sakuye, now Chief Justice of California, held that it is unconstitutional under Pruneyard for shopping mall giant Westfield Group to promulgate rules discriminating in favor of commercial speech in its malls and against non-commercial speech. The plaintiff had been detained by Westfield security after attempting to discuss the principles of his Christian faith with strangers at the Westfield Galleria at Roseville. And that looks like the most recent case and mention about Pruneyard, at least in this particular article at Pruneyard and the Wikipedia, Pruneyard Shopping Center versus Robbins. In Santa Cruz, apparently, regardless of the recent decisions which insist on there at least being reasonable rules before the Pruneyard, before a shopping center can ban solicitors or ban leafleters or ban free speech, as Trader Joe's has done for the last year and a half, that apparently is not the case in Santa Cruz, that we have those rights anymore, thanks to a combination of eager property owners, subservient or malicious businesses, compliant police officers and security guards, and most important, an apathetic, if not, one wants to be careful when using the word fascist sympathetic community, but it does seem people are just not too concerned about these rights anymore. When I talked to a Trader Joe's employees, they told me, well, there are people who are feeling bothered by the people with the petitions out front. In this case, actually in the back.
So I have thought of, I continue to patronize Trader Joe's. So there shows you the strength of my principles here. But I may myself, particularly if somebody wants to join me, set up a little table or have some nice urging people to start boycotting or at least questioning the issue of Trader Joe's ban on soliciting. In the studio with me, I have a new guest, possibly co-host, I can never be sure, the notorious, soon to be a jailbird, Linda Lee Master. I call her Lighthouse Linda for her forthrightness in standing up on a number of issues in the last 20 years on homeless civil rights. 30 years, but I'm only going back 20. You can go back 30 if you want. So what do you think? Should we start holding Trader Joe's feet to the fire by actually exerting our California Constitution First Amendment rights?
I think people that don't have warrants and have time for a vacation could enjoy the jail visit, maybe, but I think there needs to be a lot of public education about this. You know, people seem confused whether we have free speech rights or not. I was listening to what you read about California, and for just a flicker, my hopes got up for my case. By the way, I only have a minute. I don't get to be your co-host, but thank you for the... Seems like an offer.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I could announce my trial date and give me a minute or two.
Oh, yes. You are, of course, accused of illegal lodging, that is to say, protesting without the permission of the sheriff in front of the county building at night with a bunch of other homeless people around the issue of the scandalous Santa Cruz City sleeping ban.
Yes, it started out focusing on the sleeping ban, but the idea is that criminalizing people for sleeping who need to sleep, which is all humans and other mammals, other critters, shouldn't be a crime. So the law is a crime, too, but they're going to string me up anyway, I suppose. The latest news on the trial date is that there will be a trial on the 19th of September at 9 a.m., and there's a little, like, readiness trial the week before that. But I want to encourage people who... If you're following this, I assume, and you're sentient, it's incredible to you. But if it's not, you could learn a lot between now and September 19th, you know. I don't want to go to jail or have to do slave labor because I'm alleged to have fallen asleep at a sleep demonstration, but I'd rather do that than be twisted around with the pliers of the legal system as if I were some kind of criminal. I mean, they can make me into a criminal, but I don't feel like a criminal, so we have to work that out. And, of course, once you get into court, it's arbitrary according to what the judge wishes, in my view.
Yeah, of course, the websites to go to get a lot of information on that are Peace Camp 2010, your blog, Hearth by Linda, Becky Johnson's blog, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. And this isn't the exact total name of each of the blogs, but this will put you in them if you search for them.
Yeah.
And then I believe indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz Indie Media also has a number of articles, particularly if you search on that website for Norse, the famous Robert Norse, the well-beloved and much-loved talk show host.
And Peace Camp. And look at the comments if you do go to Indie Bay, because they sort of bring some of the articles to life. In my view, shows the diversity of opinion of the ignorant community.
Well, I know there was also a California a Santa Cruz census recently that you told me you were beginning to look through the census report that was released, a week ago Wednesday?
It came out last Wednesday morning officially to the larger community, but the sponsors, which includes most of the cities, I don't think Scotts Valley, but other cities here in our county and the county, helped to pay for and pitch this survey so it can be scientifically good. And they had a preview a month before. So the powers that be, or our leaders, if you want to call them that, they've been knowing that something's got to give. Basically, it shows that the numbers of homeless people are growing, that the numbers of young homeless people, like late teens through mid-20s, are growing exponentially compared to the overall population, that the numbers of homeless people who are here living in vehicles, and especially the numbers of new homeless are leaping. No surprise, since they're auctioning off people's foreclosed homes on the steps of the county building frequently. I mean, there's a correlation here about the overall economy, but because it's growing so fast compared to what people are doing about it, I think there's an emergency that our denial for most of us is just ignoring, and that's going to make it worse.
Yeah, I haven't read the report in detail. I saw the Sentinel's coverage and Becky Johnson's comments. She's an activist who also regularly covers this. And for those interested in these homeless issues, you can get on the email list that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, puts out. Just either call me at 423-HUF, 423-4833, or drop me an email at rnorse, number three, at hotmail.com, and we'll put you on. And perhaps sometimes, Linda, your work shows up on the HUF email list.
Yeah, I write my personal opinions there, and sometimes they end up everywhere.
Indeed. Well, hang around if you feel like it. Or I guess you're kind of en route.
I gotta go pick some people up at 8, and it looked like I had an extra 10 minutes, so I cut through town.
Oh, good. I'm glad you came in.
Thank you. Anything
coming up in the next week of an interest? You think you want to bring to our attention?
No, there probably is, but I haven't been tracking very well.
I know lately. That the police obsolescence workshop is just ending at the Sub Rosa, and that's something that now is, it goes from 5:30 to 7 or 7:30 every Thursday evening. Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific has this, and it's a workshop that looks to encouraging the community to take on responsibilities that are being abusively and ineptly undertaken by police agencies, namely, you know.
And inappropriately, whether they were apt or not. Why have the police do things that you need to do for yourself? They have a big enough job, and they're having enough trouble doing it well, most of them.
I think one of the things that the Police Obsolescence Workshop is working on is giving out cell phones, old cell phones, to poor people and homeless people so they can video and audio contacts with police so as to encourage that there be a documented record of what goes down, which may also discourage the kind of abuse that one of the earlier callers talked about in Fullerton, the murder of a homeless man by apparently a gang bang of blue uniformed thugs with guns and city authority there.
Yeah.
So,
you know, your listeners might want to check the website of the National Coalition on Homelessness to realize what a transcontinental disaster of abuse and assault and murders are going on just because people who are homeless, and therefore, thanks to the inadequacies of our elected, including local governments, they're ripe for being preyed upon because they're outside the system in so many senses. So people that are angry or people that are arrogant and elitist, they go out and kill homeless people like it's a sport. And you don't even read about it in the daily paper.
Particularly not in the Sentinel, or the Urinal, as I like to call it.
Not in any of those commercialist right-wing newspapers that are telling you everything you don't need to know about how the world works and not telling you what's going on right around you.
Well, let's hear what you are going to hear on the air here on Free Radio. Some more interviews. I think we're going to hear a little bit more from Rob Quintus, who is unceremoniously ejected from the Trader Joe's shopping center for soliciting signatures for a petition, which he was trying to have gathered. He's one of the kind of a professional petition gatherer, signature gatherer for petitions, which is a way some people survive and a way others do public service.
Yeah.
And it's Mama Grande speaking, and Kurtick is on the panel.
That looks like we actually reached the end of that Quintus Cornish bit. I haven't seen him around. Actually, I have seen him. I think I saw him. He's migrated to Pacific Avenue, where actually another issue has arisen. I've heard it mentioned by a journalist who shall remain nameless because she or he wishes to consider this issue before going public on it, whether the panhandling laws downtown against soliciting are not being selectively enforced against homeless people for sitting around within, you know, 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 14 feet of a bench, and there were on 95% of the public sidewalks in downtown Santa Cruz, and 100% of the sidewalks in elsewhere in town which have any businesses nearby that is adjacent to the sidewalk. It is illegal to even hold up a sign asking for food, money, or anything of value. Whereas solicitors can come up to you and ask to get your attention. If a panhandler tries that, that's illegal. So the idea that for one class it's okay, for another it isn't, is an issue for at least one reporter who's looking into it, and I commend that person for his and her for their thoughts on that issue. And maybe we'll hear more from that person later. It's, you know, the public spaces are increasingly restricted and increasingly constricted and increasingly over-policed. Police probably don't even need to have officers walking up and down. If they have their favorite crypto-fascist snitch around who wants to shut down a musical performer or move a political tabler or harass a panhandler, they just call the police and they come out in force to move along that person as though a crime were actually being committed. Under the Coonerty Lane downtown ordinances of our city council, or we can also call them the Martine Bernal City Manager downtown ordinances, although Bernal did not propose or pass those ordinances. He is the most powerful figure in the city who ultimately controls the police department. Let's get back to some more interviews and see what we got. And actually, what I have here is a public record I made, although it's not an official record, of my appeal of the famous Sidewalk Sing Song case, which is the case of myself and two others, Becky Johnson and Robert Facer. Actually, there are about five others, singing songs in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz at midday at a table in what's usually called, what was previously been referred to as the free speech zone. I guess we can refer to it now as the no singing zone, which it actually has been used for singing since then. It's used occasionally by other groups. But when we attempted to use it a year and a half ago, we were ticketed. We were then taken to trial. City attorney spent thousands of dollars of his resources coming in, supporting a private heckler who wanted us gone. And now, after the commissioner, Kim Baskett, found us guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise for singing the song Downtown with homeless lyrics at midday, I sang it for a total of about... My total amount of singing time was no more than 10 or 15 minutes, and dispersed over a period of about an hour and a half. And others sang a little longer for over the same period, but mostly people were not singing. Mostly we were petitioning and tabling and so forth. But songs are necessary as a form of political speech, and we were singing about the homeless death rate and the criminalization of the homeless downtown. Actually, the song didn't go into the homeless death rate. That was the topic of our table's display, though, and that we were signing people up about that, interviewing people for this show and so forth. Anyway, I was fined $450, and we've appealed that. And this is the appeal hearing at the Santa Cruz courts. We asked them to record it. They declined, but they said I could record it, and I'm now playing that recording.
So we're here in three, and it's Amagranda speaking, and Gertick is on the panel.
There's a two-judge panel. I'd agreed to a two-judge panel along with Ed Fry, who was representing another defendant, Robert Blindbear Facer, who was also fined $450 for singing, and he wasn't really singing. He had a small drum. He had with him, I don't know that he actually even played it, but it was with him, And all kinds of innocent behavior was caught up in this conviction, which had nothing to do with any kind of, even the ordinance involved, unreasonably disturbing noise. But these two judges heard our appeal and, of course, turned us down. But we'll play a little bit of it for you to hear the back and forth, although it may not be as audible as we'd hoped.
00697, People versus Robert Morrison, People versus Robert Facer. Can we have appearances, please?
Ed Fry for Robert Facer.
I'll be appearing, excuse me, in pro per.
Kyle Ariano for Respondent Statement. And what we discussed before we actually called the cases for, because of the unavailable.
This is Judge Paul Miragonda.
Judge Simons, due to a family emergency, Judge Wolfen, trial. Are all sides prepared to stipulate to two appellate judges here? And Ms. Mr. Ariano?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Fry?
Yes.
Mr. Morrison?
Yes.
Judge Burdick?
Yes, so I've taken the lead on this case, and I reviewed all the briefing that has been filed, Mr.
This is Judge Burdick speaking.
Opening brief, the opening increment.
And unfortunately, this does not sound airworthy. Ironically, the faster speed, which is supposed to give better quality, is giving more background noise. So it appears that we're going to have to wait on this. The actual disposition of this case, it has been certified to a higher court by these two judges who said there were constitutional issues that they acknowledged were in dispute, but they apparently found the Constitution gives one heckler the right to shut down a bunch of folks on Pacific Avenue who are singing, playing, demonstrating. At least in terms of the facts of this case, they upheld the trial judge's verdict, which we thought was based as well, and the legal arguments we used, on an unreasonably vague law. The name of the law is Unreasonably Disturbing Noise. We thought it was an unreasonably vague law, and I've read that law, the text of that law before here. It has a very kind of subjective series of standards, to say the least, that it proposes. The actual text of the law, for those who are interested, and this is not just relevant to our case, because it can be applied to anybody else on Pacific Avenue, and has, no person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds, A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and B, which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. That's Municipal Code 9.36.020, unreasonably disturbing noises. Now, you wouldn't normally think noises refers to music and singing, but apparently the Downtown Association and the Police Department have decided this is the best way to shut down street performers that residents and others don't like, instead of asking them to perhaps move down or along, quiet down a bit, reapplying the Santa Cruz voluntary street performers guidelines, which worked for 22 years and suggests that after an hour, if a performer has been there for a time, it would be good if they shared the space with somebody else or acknowledged that the business person was getting tired of hearing the same tune again and again in their shop, though. Business people usually have a lot of options, like they have music of their own they can play, they can close their door, they can do all kinds of things, which makes me less sympathetic to businesses, perhaps, than I ought to be. But in any case, for 22 years, these voluntary guidelines worked fine until 2002, when the council changed it, ratified by the Rotkin-Coonerty councils ever since. And that's a real pity. Although, full disclosure, performers have said to me recently they haven't noticed a lot of additional harassment against them downtown, which could be, I have not been out there, you know, 24 hours a day or even regularly. We'd like to set up some kind of a monitoring system. If anybody's interested in doing this, do give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, to keep an ear on the street and see what's going on. But some police behavior is, as you've probably gathered if you regularly listen to this show, is way out of bounds and has been happening regularly. But in terms of musical performers, the drum circle, it's not really a circle anymore, it's kind of a, the drum thread has migrated to the, or shall I say, been driven to the levee path every Wednesday. I went to it yesterday to check it out. And people were there enjoying themselves along one side of the levee path. It's illegal on the other side to protect the vegetation, don't you know, or to protect the river, or to, for the health and safety of the community, whatever their latest is. Come in. And we have various alien forces invading the studio again, which I'm going to make careful note of. Anyway, there is a drum thread, previously a drum circle, and that happens every Wednesday. And there haven't been a lot of harassment tickets, though. I understand Robert Blind Bear Facer has gotten another one and went to trial on Tuesday on a charge of obstructing the sidewalk. And I haven't heard back whether that was a drum circle obstructing the sidewalk, which I think it probably was, or one downtown. And if once I learn about that, I'll give you more details on what's cooking with that particular citation. So let's turn now to some more of my endless street interviews and see if we can, I think this actually is from the drum circle. Maybe we can actually hear some drumming here and from yesterday's drum circle. Let's see what we got.
And I count, 10, 20, 30, 35 people kind of strung out along the levee.
Sing it out, brother!
Homeland Security!
So, what's the story, birthday boy? Want to do a quick interview for free radio?
Hey, happy birthday, birthday boy!
Well, that's very nice, but I...
Thank you.
That's the free stuff. Uh-huh. I'm not a big smoker, but I appreciate the offer, man.
That's the free stuff off the budget I smoke.
So you are a... You've been up here pretty regularly, Dreamcatcher, every Wednesday, or...?
I came down for an eye examination today, and I'm finally getting the glasses that I got from the homeless fair half a year ago.
March!
Yeah, yeah, they had only two pairs left, and the frames that they had sitting there next to the black ones were perfect, matched my outfit.
And that sounds good.
And I got this done down
your
there.
Birthday, or your mother's birthing day was yesterday?
Yeah, 7/22/59. I turned 52.
A week or two ago.
Correct. And I'm having the best time of life. I called my daughter and my twin brother for the first time in 4 years.
Identical twin brother?
No, the most unidentical twin that anybody ever meets.
Now, no hassles with police up here on the levee here?
No, they saw me standing here and I waved to them. They turned around and went the other way. Seriously.
Well, that's not friendly.
Yes, it is.
I see. Maybe it is friendly.
Yeah. At least they waved to us. What's up, Robert? So, I'm down here on Wednesday playing my guitar, looking for my stolen bike, and letting everybody know I love them.
Any hassles with musicians on the mall downtown Pacific Avenue?
No, I've been talking with everybody, and, you know, the cops aren't even being bothered with it, you know, because there's hardly anybody there in front of boards anymore. That's kind of like the zone, and there was a good little...
The dead zone.
Now it's the dead zone. It's called the DZ instead of the DC. I better take that stress test ahead sign down then.
Well, I know they do have these new panhandler beware meters, you know.
Is that what those are?
Yeah, they're imagine positive change, meaning let's positively get rid of these panhandling types.
Well, you can wear a different costume and still get the same results. Just, you know, be a little more seen costume conscious. You know,
blend in with the middle class.
Yeah, don't walk faster, don't walk slower, don't sit too long, and wear the same color.
I see. We've been talking with...
Dreamcatcher.
Thank you, Dreamcatcher. And we hear the beat of the drums here on the levee. Many a thump, samurai act, eerie. But no sign of Robert Vladimir Facer, who I came here to see. He's cooking a pot of stew. And the bikers are biking by. A couple of folks with doggies. Hacky sacking going on too, and the occasional chess game. It looks pretty mellow, and I don't smell weed, but weed is about. So there we have it. Everyone sitting on the left or downtown business side of the mall, rather than on the right or river side, I suppose, because it's. No, illegal. It's on the other side. Signs here, can you just say area closed? That's a sign at the other side of the levee. Persons who enter this area will be cited for violating the Sumter's Municipal Code 13.04.011, Section C. Then it says, Santa Cruz, welcome to the Santa Cruz, City of Santa Cruz, welcome to the San Lorenzo Riverway, hours sunrise to sunset, prevent erosion by staying on the path. And it's, to my eyes and my sensibilities, nearly perfect weather. So, there you have it. Drum Circle, August 3rd, 2011, on the Santa Cruz levee. Wednesday.
So, I actually did find an audible section of that court appeal hearing. coincidentally, it was my section. You get to hear me bravely standing up before the two-judge panel and getting shot down. Not much in the way of shooting, since I knew that was going to happen to begin with. But I'm going to play it for those interested in these arguments, and that will probably wind up the show. We're going to have Uncle Dennis's able seconds in here giving all kinds of creaming and dragging around, or dragging in the dregs, and they're going to make everybody cream with the dregs, or cream to the dregs, or possibly, well, you'll catch the idea as you hear them. I'll be back on Sunday again, and then again, and again, endlessly, until I finally wise up, at 9:30. We may be having the smart meter debate. We've already got one of the participants, a pro-smart meter guy, Keith Gudger. And we're hoping to get the anti-smart meter troop, Heidi and Josh Hart. I guess it's not, Heidi is not married to Josh and doesn't have the same last name, but I don't know Heidi's last name. But who knows? We'll see who we can get. If you want to catch me off air between shows, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you've got Copwatch phenomena to report, or you want to be on the HUFF email list, or you're curious, you've got questions, give a call to 423-4833. And again, a tip of the hat to the perennial caller who calls in from Los Angeles and gives us his comic critiques. Perhaps our next talk show host will be have more time to revel in those comic interludes. I lack a sense of humor on this particular situation, but I've always been a grumpy guy. So let's listen to a little of this even more humorless presentation at court before a two-judge panel around the issue of should a person be allowed to sing in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz subversive songs that wake up a daytime sleeper sleeping in the St. George at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Just briefly with respect to what's already been said, one of the findings of the court was it was necessary to the performance of the activity that singing is not a necessary component in essence to any political protest. That seemed to be the implication of the commissioner's ruling. I think that on its face would tend to allow the elimination of singing under any and all circumstances, and I think it does not comport with the First Amendment, and also goes to show insufficiency of the evidence. However, let me go through what I've written here.
I'm not a lawyer, as you know, but an activist and a journalist, so bear with me. I'm going to be stumbling along, as you've already heard. There are deeper legal problems here that you must correct in this case. I hope you would change your mind even at this late point. And I'm speaking of, the UDN law, which I call the Unreasonably Disturbing Noise Law, which we're looking at here, 9.36020, because your decision will impact not just our case, but the rights of all performers, musicians, activists, indeed. It will also impact police officers, residents, businesses, all those who as a community share the sidewalk, as well as the audiences, the tourists, residents, and workers who frequent the sidewalks. Your decision on the rule of law will impact all of us. And though I refer to facts at points to give you a common understanding of what happened as far as we see it, it is the law, as you know, that is at issue here, and the trial court's decision under the law. Does the law, this law, on its face, give due and reasonable notice which acts would constitute a violation? By this notice, does it provide a fair and reasonable opportunity for an ordinary person to understand and obey its provisions? You've read the law aloud before we begin. There's no need to repeat it. Or in legal terms, is constitutional due process satisfied? The case law enunciating this rule is best stated in Connolly versus General Construction. A statute which either forbids or requires the doing of an act in terms so vague that men of common intelligence must necessarily guess at its meaning and differ as to its application violates the first essential of due process. This is not whether a judge might make a decision about it, but whether an ordinary person in the street reading this law could decide what is reasonable and unreasonable level of noise. You've seen the law. Nowhere in the code are the terms unreasonably disturbing, physically annoying, ordinary sensitiveness, so harsh, so prolonged, so unusual, physical discomfort, clearly defined to give a guide to the performer or to the possible complainant or to a police officer or even to a judge as to what they mean. These are wholly subjective terms which create a hodgepodge of vague and ambiguous criteria, particularly significant when a political protest in a public forum, which the sidewalk is, as you know, is involved. Consider the word annoying. Writing for the majority in U.S. versus Williams, Justice Scalia wrote, "The due process problem with the term annoying was that it invited wholly subjective judgments without statutory definitions, narrowing context, or settled legal meaning. The other terms are equally ambiguous. The words which define the elements of the offense are offered without definition or qualification, commonplace in statutory construction. To understand this, we only have to go as far as the code that immediately precedes this in the municipal code, 9.36010, which is the noise curfew ordinance. This law reads, no person shall between the hours of 10 and 8 make, cause, or suffer to be made any offensive noise, one, which is made within 100 feet of any building or place regularly used for sleeping purposes, or two, which disturbs or would tend to disturb any person within hearing distance of such noise. This is a much looser criteria, much stricter criteria. But note, the term offensive noise is defined at length. Any noise, this is the definition in the statute, which is loud, boisterous, irritating, penetrating, or unusual, or is unreasonably distracting in any other manner, such that it is likely to disturb people in the vicinity of such noise, and includes, but is not limited to, noise made by barking or howling dogs, by an individual alone, or by a group of people engaged in any business meeting, gathering, game, dance, or amusement, or by any appliance, contrivance, device, structure, construction, ride, machine, implement, or instrument. This is pretty specific. However, in the case of the law under which we're charged with, we, the ordinary citizens, are left to simply guess at what precisely we are prohibited to cause, suffer, or permit to be made. These terms do not fall within the common understanding of the average citizen. Ask anyone on the street if they understand what level of volume they can speak at or sing at or play a musical instrument, I don't think they could tell you. Certainly Officer Schoenfeld couldn't. She couldn't tell us. We asked her repeatedly. They almost seem, these terms intentionally selected to defy clear interpretation and in simplest form proper notice as required by due process. The Williams Court suggests the essential question. What renders a statute vague is not the possibility that it will sometimes be difficult to determine whether the incriminating fact it establishes has been proved, but rather the indeterminacy or precisely what that fact is. This law wholly fails to provide the clear definiteness required by fundamental due process. So in Colander versus Larson, the court ambiguously stated, the void for vagueness doctrine requires that a penal statute defined with sufficient definiteness that ordinary people can understand what conduct is prohibited and in a manner that does not encourage arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. And, of course, the danger for our community is that this ordinance has been and will be continued to be used to blunt, chill, or silence the unpopular voice. If we can't reasonably determine what facts need to be proved, how can we in good faith determine that those necessary facts have been proved? That is the heart of the matter.
And these are arguments which you have made in your brief, and we consider these arguments as the cases that you cited.
We'll finish. I believe the judgment of the lower court in this matter was an error, and I suggest that the court reverse it, incorporate the arguments in the Facer Place case, plus all those in my briefs. In plain everyday language, can a musician or an activist or a person know just what is legal behavior under this law? Can a police officer reasonably enforce this law? Can a person concerned about loud noise understand from the specific wording what is unreasonably loud? And more ominously, should performers, petitioners, and ordinary citizens be regularly forced to stop First Amendment activity because it is found unreasonably disturbing by anonymous complaint? And I have two more sentences. Does a day sleeper have a reasonable expectation that there be quiet on the sidewalk below during the middle of the day on Pacific Avenue? More baldly, will this appeals court support the city attorney's office prosecution of a legitimate run-of-the-mill political protest in front of the mayor's business? The court's job is to protect the public, even against well-meaning officials. The city council needs to rewrite this law. Thank you.
And they said, no, we uphold the conviction, but we think there are sufficient issues that we will certify it to the court above. So the court above will have a shot at it, and we get to argue endlessly while the police march up and down doing their thing on Pacific Avenue. Actually, you know, you won't see the police. There aren't that many police. The budget doesn't really allow for a lot of that. We've got these sort of, you know, underpaid minimum wage type cops, the hosts, the security guards, you know, the grump in front of the Palomar Hotel who doesn't like protesters and so forth. So, that's the story. I'm going to turn the mic over to that renowned substitute and actually a primetime broadcaster, R. Duck, who's here with his entourage, and they're going to entourage you into the next 3 hours. So I'm having a little trouble with this. If you have some music you want to put on there, R. Duck, it's time to step up to the mic and go for it. And again, folks, thanks for listening to this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I will be doing the same thing, hopefully not forever, but at least again on Sunday. And maybe you'll be able to hear a smart meter debate. What do smart meters have to do with homeless civil rights? Well, you tell me. I'll figure that one out on Sunday. So there, I guess. I'm running out of patter here. You better jump on, R. Duck, before I embarrass myself further.
How smart is a meter, anyway? What's the IQ point to figure out?
That may be, we can't figure out what a decibel reading. You're not allowed to do decibel readings on Pacific Avenue to determine if the noise is unreasonably loud. Is a smart meter unreasonably dangerous? Well, that's going to be the subject, I guess, in part of the discussion on Sunday.
Well, perhaps the smart meter will be able to help us determine that.
We'll try to bring a smart meter into the studio and see if...
got to find a smart DJ to run it, though.
Well,
you got one. You got one over here, red shirt on. He's looking good.
flattery will get you nowhere, my boy.
Will get me on the air?
You are on the air.
I am on the air. This is great. I love being on the air.
Be on the air. Go ahead.
It's the one thing they still can't regulate so much. Eventually, we'll have breathing meters as well. And only be able to have so much at any one moment, particularly downtown. It'll certainly regulate the amount of noise you can make. And we have a caller already. This is wonderful. Oh, we're just going to put you. This is great. I'm going to put you right on the air, and you can just fill the hour while I set up the computer.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I do not believe that this is a case of the lunatics taking over the asylum. Rather, the asylum is taking over the lunatics.
Tell me more.
And I have been so pummeled by the tape of the alleged singing, of which a Zapruder equivalent exists with extraneous noise. And all I can say is that Free Radio Santa Cruz should now dedicate itself to playing Gary Puckett and the Union Gap more frequently. And if you don't do that, it will be the death of us all.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, we don't want to be the cause of anyone's death.
Well, it will be my death because, you know, I listened today to Woman, and I found some very profound subtext in that, which actually relates to the singing which was downtown Petula Clark. Now, if you cannot see the celestial connection, then you are not living in the 21st century.
I'm not sure that we are.
No. Well, sir, I have done my routine. The man before accused me of being comical.
Comical?
I would never accuse him of being comical.
But you know, the comédie française.
Maybe just conical.
Comédie française, that, you know, comedy is actually the soul of acting, of drama, and all that. Now, why is he there? He shouldn't even be there. His show is over.
Moreover, of course.
I have the Zapruder tape of his singing downtown. And there are extraneous noises. All right. Okay, well, thank you.
No one would ever accuse you of being funny.
And I wish all of you sure. very good luck and a robust August.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And God